Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts Amelia
and Beth.
And it's the season finale. Au revoir, season four.
Well, not yet. We say that at the end.
It is what it is.
And this is going to be the last episode coming at you before Amelia takes the very long walk down the very long aisle in her very white dress. She got 16 days.
As of this recording, I have 16 days. As of this episode coming out, I have less.
Much less.
Much less. But I'm excited, though.
Keep an eye on your social media because I have a sneaking suspicion that Amelia's wedding pictures will get posted all over the Ghost Hunting in New England page.
Woohoo!
You can all send her your congratulations.
Yep.
Also, I want to let everybody know it will still be okay to send her shirtless pictures. I checked with Paul, and he's okay with it.
She did not check with Paul. And
I
Paul,
did check with Paul.
When?
When you were making shish kebab earlier.
No, I was listening to the whole conversation.
We were texting.
You don't even have his number.
I do. What?
Oh, you do have his number. You do have his number. You guys do text, but not about that.
How do you know? You're not included in the text.
Because one of you would tell me. Anyway, the point is, season five, I will be married. I will have a new last name, which is almost the entire length of my complete full name. So it's very long. You probably will never hear it, though, because I don't really intend on using it that often. And yeah, that's what's going on. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to going to Hawaii for my honeymoon and hanging out with the fire gods. Then later in the summer, I'm taking a stint over to Eastern Europe. I'm going to hang out with some vampires. How about you, Beth? You have some plans coming up.
I'm going to work, and eventually I will keep working and then retire.
Beth also has a trip booked to Ireland.
Yeah, but I'm not entirely sure that we're going to go.
So anyway, speaking of my wedding and wedding events, Beth threw me a bachelorette party in New York this weekend, and it was fabulous. And we went on a fabulous ghost tour through Greenwich Village.
We sure did.
And it was great. If you guys find yourself in the area of Greenwich Village, I highly recommend going.
Mm-hmm. We went around to 10, 12 different haunted locations and heard the stories. And
it was 2 miles in 2 hours, and it was wonderful.
It was wonderful if you weren't old and fat and your hip was killing you. Beth Amelia thought it was wonderful.
Beth got a little cranky by the end, but
just a little.
But I enjoyed it.
It was great fun.
Yeah.
Luckily, it ended like right next to our hotel, so I could just collapse into the bathroom, and I filled up the tub with cold water and stuck my feet in it. And this is what old people do after they have to walk too far, folks.
There you go.
So all our kids out there, don't worry. Someday you will also be old. Take the tips from me. Run cold water into the bath and you can soak your feet in there and they'll feel much better.
Okay, so today, in the spirit of my wedding, we are talking about ghost brides and haunted wedding venues. Spooky, spooky, spooky. So kind of like a continuation on our Valentine's Day themes we do every year, but instead it's wedding themes.
I don't know why you sounded so excited about that.
I'm excited to get married. What can I say? I'm a woman in love.
It's wedding theme.
Yeah, I like it.
Would you like to start us off with a wedding theme story?
I will. And can I tell you, Beth, that when I read this story and I was working on it, I started crying because it just, like, I don't know. It gave me the feels.
We don't want any crying stories. Our podcast is not about the feels.
I'm going to try not to, but it's a feels. It's a feels.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at her, ladies and gentlemen, and she is, like, ready to cry without even having read any of it. I can see it. Like, the eyes are getting red. She's, like, holding her nose like it might start dripping.
It's just, it's a romantic tale.
Quick, tell a bad joke.
No. You know, Beth, I don't want to tell a joke, okay? But I do want to bring something up. And that thing is, you know Murphy's Law?
Yes, I am familiar with it.
All right, so you're familiar. So is there anything bad that can happen will happen? But what about Cole's Law? Have you heard of that one?
No.
Thinly sliced cabbage and mayonnaise.
I like mine with raisins.
Oh, God. It's my favorite joke. All right.
Really? More than what do you call a cow with a newborn calf?
What?
Decaffeinated.
No, I like mine better.
I already told you this joke. It's already on the pod. Sorry, folks. I'm recycling my jokes.
I
know.
And all I could think of was your mom being like, it's a
heifer. It's a
heifer calf. Oh, goodness. All right. So we are talking about the Hotel Don Cesar. And Caesar is spelled capital C, lowercase e, capital S, lowercase A-R.
Cesar.
So there's a mystery right there. Okay. The Hotel Don Cesar, otherwise known as the Pink Palace, was built on the shore of St. Pete Beach in 1928.
Hang on. Before you go any further, I just have to tell you, have you been over to my brother's house that we all grew up in like the last 30 years?
Have I been to your brother's house in the last 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
I have, yes. I've been there with you in the last 30 years.
Okay. Have you been there in the last 20 years?
I've been there within the last 3.
Okay. Have you seen the Pink Palace?
No.
So the bathroom on the first floor, before Dad moved out, he decided that he was going to redo the bathroom. And it is literally a pink palace. It has a pink tub. It has a pink marble sink. It had pink walls. It has a pink floor. And it has a pink toilet.
Amazing. I love it.
It is pink, pink, pink.
That's great.
Sorry. So when you said the Pink Palace, that was all I could think of.
All right. So this Pink Palace was built in 1928. It's a cool place where cool people hang out. It's got a club. It's got a spa. It's got a Great Gatsby vibe. It's the kind of place I would like to stay at.
Okay.
So Robert De Niro, James Woods, and Tuesday Weld starred in the 1982 movie Once Upon a Time in America, which featured scenes on the beach and the majestic Pink Palace in the background.
All right, I'm sold with Robert De Niro right there.
The 1999 film Forever Mine, starring Ray Liotta, also shot scenes there.
I'm not as big a Ray Liotta fan.
The 2020 movie, Hubie Halloween, also starred Ray Liotta and Amelia Childs.
See? Well, it didn't star Amelia Childs, but it certainly featured her.
Yes, it did. I starred in the movie. Go watch it on Netflix. Still on there. I watched it not long ago.
It's right around the 17-minute mark that Amelia makes her cinematic debut.
Debut on the big screen. Mm-hmm. I have my paycheck framed. Okay.
Stop.
The pay stub. I cashed the check. I needed some money. Okay. So today we're talking about a guy named Thomas Rowe. So during Thomas Rowe's time as a student in London in the 1890s, he would frequent the opera regularly. One night he went to see his favorite play, Maritana, starring a beautiful woman by the name of Lucinda. As soon as Thomas laid eyes on Lucinda, he immediately fell madly in love. And shortly after, they started to meet each other on a regular basis. The pair quickly became enamored with one another and affectionately referred to each other as Maritana and Don Cesar during their secret meetings by a secluded fountain. But Lucinda's parents forbid the relationship. As Thomas and Lucinda were of different religions, they quickly brought her back to Spain. Thomas returned to America completely heartbroken and spent years trying to reunite with Lucinda. Countless love letters were returned unopened. In the end, the only communication he ever received was a news clipping of her death accompanied by a note addressed to my beloved Don Cesar, which read, "Time is infinite. I wait for you by our fountain to share our timeless love. Our destiny is time."
She's crying. She's actually crying.
It's really beautiful and nice. And they sent that with her death note. So the same, he was sending her these letters and they were getting returned unsent. They were taking her letters and she was writing them too this whole time. It's just really nice. It's really beautiful.
It is. It's terrific. Let's get to the ghost.
Thomas vowed he would never love again. It was after this he set out to build the Don Caesar Hotel. He built an exact replica of the fountain where he and Lucinda used to meet together all those years ago. The lobby courtyard and the fountain are the exact complete 100%, just like as if you were in London. It's Thomas's tribute to his lost love. And since his passing, guests and staff report otherworldly sightings of a gentleman sporting an old-fashioned Panama hat and a white summer suit, strolling the grounds and greeting guests. But when he is approached, he will disappear.
What is it with these ghosts that just keep disappearing when you walk up to be like, where'd you get that cool hat?
The first reports of the ghosts were in 1973. Staff and guests have reported seeing a gentleman in a white suit that matches that of Thomas, who used to always wear his signature white suit all the time. Other guests reported being welcomed by a smiling man on their entrance to the hotel. He's often seen on the fifth floor, in the lobby, and in the garden, often wearing his hat. He's also known, like staff, when they're in there, that if they're in the kitchen and they have their hands full, a door will just open.
Oh, that's helpful.
Like on its own. Yeah, it's like a really, it's like so, like a ghost helping. But you know the biggest thing, Beth? People often see him in his suit holding hands of a beautiful raven-haired woman believed to be the ghost of Lucinda.
Aww.
He built the fountain and she came back to meet him there and they shared their timeless love.
That's lovely.
It is. See what I mean? You see why this is so moving? It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful love story. You are such your mother's daughter.
I can't help it.
I know you can't.
I love love. I do. I love ghosts. I love gore, but I love love.
It was a lovely story. You did a great job.
And as like a little note, not so lovely, I don't know if he ever did love again, but I know he was married. And actually, his wife was estranged, but when he passed away, she got the hotel still because they weren't legally divorced. That's why you need a prenup, guys. Okay. I'm also not getting a prenup, but I don't have, you know. All right. So anyway, would you like to tell the next story, Beth, while I fix my mascara?
Oh, absolutely. And folks, this week I am going to cheat. Typically, you hear me read things that are actually very authentically mine. I go through, I do my research, and I very carefully stay away from that nasty plagiarism thing. But this week, I found an article, and this is on strangemaine.blogspot.com, right? And it's about a ghost bride in Maine. Okay, so Amelia's little inn was in Maine, and here we are. I have another one. So
Amelia hasn't read her little inn story yet, Bob.
Wait, wasn't that the one you just read about, the Pink Palace?
No, the Pink Palace is in Florida.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Scratch that.
It's okay. Foreshadowing.
Right, so one of the things that I really liked about this article is it's actually a firsthand account of a ghost sighting. And I think that that's something that we've talked about a few times before on here, about the idea that you hear that, you know, there are tons of witnesses, lots of people have seen this, but good luck actually getting that firsthand account and hearing from people what was there and what happened. So I think that this one is really interesting in that it also involved a police report. So this is called Spectral Lady Hitches Ride Vanishes by Mark LaFlamme. I don't know, LaFlamme. And it's from August 6th, 2009. It happened like this. Shortly after midnight on July 11, a police officer in Mechanic Falls stopped to check on a teenage driver who was frantically flashing his headlights. When the cop approached the car, he found a 16-year-old named David who was badly shaken. The kid was in tears and babbling about something that had happened moments ago in Poland. Not Poland the country in Europe, but Poland, Maine. You know, you might have heard they have some water from there. It's called Poland Springs. That area of the world. The story David told was a crazy one, but not unique. For generations, travelers through this dark place have told tales of a young lady dressed in white hitchhiking along Route 26. Sometimes she's dressed in a prom dress and sits quietly in the passenger seat. Other times, she is a bride dressed in white or a morose young woman with a cautionary message to deliver. But our friend David had never heard those stories. He sat in his car stammering and trying to explain to the frowning policeman what had happened. Just before 2 a.m., David was driving on Route 26 bound for Oxford. In the midst of all the darkness that collects in the middle of the night in Poland, suddenly there was a gleam of light on the roadside. She was standing on the side of the road near the frozen custard place. At first, it was just a white glow, David said. I drove up closer and saw that it was a woman. She looked to be between 20 and 24. I pulled over and she said, "Can you bring me to the church on Route 11? She asked me if I could start driving faster because she was late for her wedding, David said. Those of us who have been around for a while know that when a woman found wandering the back roads starts babbling about going to meet her beloved, what you have on your hands is a ghost. We will take appropriate action, which may include flinging ourselves out the window." But David steeled up and drove on with the curious woman in the wedding gown. He turned onto Route 11, where even greater darkness gathers, and within a quarter of a mile, he found what appeared to be a church. He stopped between two posts out front and asked his eager rider if this was the right place. "She said goodbye," David said, "and when I turned to look at her, she was gone. I'll give you a moment to rub the chill from your skin." David is absolutely sure the passenger door of his Camaro was never opened. When he peered out into the night around him, he saw no sign of the woman in white, no brightly glowing gown in all of the blackness along Route 11. The ghost hitchhiker of Route 26 comes with a variety of stories. In the most common, the woman wandering the dark roads is the murdered bride of George Knight, slashed to death in 1856 in her farmhouse on Route 11. The woman will deliver a warning, or perhaps a prediction, to the person who picks her up. Then she vanishes. In another version, the roaming woman is the ghost of a young girl killed on her way to the prom. She is said to wander near the Poland Spring Inn, waiting for a ride in her eternal quest to make it to the dance. Like the slain Mrs. Knight, the ghost of the prom girl is said to vanish before the ride is over. "I don't think it was either of them," David says of his spectral passenger. His research, there is plenty to be found on the web regarding the ghost of Route 26, has led him to believe that the lady who sat in his Camaro was a bride struck and killed by a car on the way to her wedding in the 1930s. A woman forever trying to reach the site of that long-ago blessed event and disappearing once she arrives. David was also told that the man who was to marry the young lady is still alive, an elderly man who lives in Oxford. The terrain of local legend is a labyrinth of falsehoods, misinformation, and tiny kernels of truth that get built upon and built upon like papier-mâché over decades of retelling. David relates his tale with excitement, but without the kind of rhetorical battering you find in those who are trying to convince you of a lie. "I sought him out for this story. He didn't come to me. He only spoke to me hesitantly once I explained what I was after." And at last, there is a police report on the matter. The prettily dressed lady may not have identified her killer or made her way to the altar or the prom, but at the very least, she climbed her way up out of local lore and into the public record. It took a brave kid in a Camaro to get her there.
Good story.
Yes, I think that Mark LaFlamme, I'm going to go with Flamme. I think that Mark LaFlamme wrote a great article there.
Oh,
and
yeah, nice.
It's very spooky, and it's very woman in white. You know, it's a bride who was murdered. And I think that I would have liked to hear more details about her murder. And, you know, maybe for our spinoff podcast, we'll do the murders of haunted places. I don't know. Well, last week you snuck in that nice story about Mr. Parkman.
You want to start a true crime podcast on the side?
No, I don't think so. Oh.
Sounds like that's what you were saying.
Oh, no, that was just like bonus material. But again, I would have to go and find the the old police reports from 1852 and tell that story. And who knows? Maybe it's not an interesting story.
Maybe.
Maybe it's a fabulously interesting story. What do I know?
Maybe.
Right. All the same, Route 26, Poland, Maine. You might find a hitchhiker there, and she might be a ghost. I like to think I can do a good down east. No, you didn't like that one? Well, but this, I mean, this is like the quintessential one. You can't get there from here. No, still no good?
No.
Do you ever wonder what 25 thoughts went through a person's head before they just came out with a simple no? I watched a whole range of thoughts go on, and that was the one that fell out of her mouth.
What did you say? What was the last thing you said?
Can't get there from here. Oh, I didn't get it that time.
No,
can't get there from here.
Well, I can't get there from here. Okay, now I'm going to do my small story. It is about the Lucerne Inn. We're just outside of Bangor. And according to their webpage, the Lucerne Inn offers 31 guest rooms and suites in 6 unique options. Scenic views of Bangor, Maine countryside are just the beginning of the perks that will delight you during your stay. Featuring the warmth and coziness of 200-year-old farmhouse, each of the room option merges timeless New England charm with the comforts found in modern day. So this, on a website of the spookiest places to get married, was the number one spooky place to get married in New England.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Even more than the place in Gloucester we talked about a few weeks back?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
This was rated number one.
All right. Based on that website?
Correct.
Okay.
I don't think there's like a certified. It's not like an Emmy.
You don't think?
It's not like an Oscar.
You don't think like the New York Times
is... got the most haunted like place to get married? Okay. The inn has been maintained since it was built in 1818 and is listed on the Registrar of Historical Places. After decades of strange noises and shadows and other occurrences being reported by visitors, people started to wonder if it was haunted.
Huh.
And it was. So there's like no information on this haunting. And everywhere I looked, just, and that's what I mean. It's a very short one. Just a little bit.
Meaning like you're already done?
I'm more than halfway done. So I'm more than halfway done with this story.
Okay.
So basically what everyone says is that many decades ago, there was a caretaker by the name of Nathan. And Nathan liked taking care of his inn. And Nathan was married. And Nathan's wife liked taking care of the guests. And one night, Nathan walked in to find his wife taking extra special care of a guest. And he freaked out and killed them both. And then...
So just to clarify, his wife was in some sort of amorous...
She was boinking a guest.
We have children who listen to this.
That's why I used the word boink. Anywho, he exploded in rage. He murdered his wife. He murdered the man. I'm assuming it was a man. Everywhere I said, it just said guest. So I guess it could be anything. But he walked down the hall and then he took his own life too. So pretty tragic event. Really terrible thing happened, you know, murder, suicide.
Double murder, suicide.
Yes. And so now people hear voices and they hear a piano playing and, you know, stuff kind of moves around and that's it.
Do we know what the voices say?
Nope.
Are they like, what are you doing? Stop hitting me with that axe.
No, I couldn't even find how he killed it. I couldn't even find his last name or her first name.
So just some guy named Nathan?
Some guy
killed
named Nathan.
Killed his wife and her lover and then offed himself.
Yep.
And now they hang around yelling at each other.
Yep.
All right. Well,
that's that.
I mean, we here at Ghost Hunting in New England do not advocate that you kill anyone. But if you do happen to kill someone, maybe don't kill yourself right next to them because you might get stuck here with them forever. Yelling at them. Like Nathan and his wife at the Lucerne Inn in Bangor, Maine.
Yeah. Don't kill anyone.
Don't kill anyone.
Don't murder suicide.
Somebody told me once, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And I always thought that made sense.
It sure does.
Yeah. All right. Would you like me to tell my other story?
Yes.
Okay. So my other story is about Catherine's ghost. Have you been up to Tobin's cabin in Beddington?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the road before you turn onto the unpaved road, so that last crossroad is Route 182.
Uh-huh.
Right across from the airline diner or whatever it is. Uh-huh. So this is the road that we're talking about, Route 182. So it's right across the lake from where Tobin lives and where you and I have been lots of times.
Can you remind our listeners who Tobin is?
Tobin is my mom's partner.
Okay.
And he has a place in Maine. It's like an hour north of Bangor. And so we are talking about Catherine's ghost, which is apparently seen right across the lake from where Tobin lives. Anyway, so it's on Route 182 and it runs between Franklin and Cherryfield. It's actually known more colloquially. It's also known as the Black Woods Road because I cannot say colloquially this
way. We already did this story on the show. I did this. This was on one of our Valentine's Day episodes. It was a little fuck.
What? What do you mean you already told this story?
I already told it. We have one of the Valentine's Day versions. The Little Fox.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How do you know?
How do I know? How many Catherine's ghosts are in Maine on that road near Catherine's Hill?
Yeah, in Fox Pond.
Yeah.
And with all the weird electromagnetic energy?
Yes.
Wow. And her name was Catherine Downing?
All right, tell the story.
No, now you just ruined my story.
I didn't ruin it.
Anyway,
your story.
So apparently, if you want to hear about Catherine's ghost, you need to go back to season two and listen to Amelia and Will.
No, go tell the story.
I don't want to tell the story now.
We want to hear you tell the story.
I don't want listeners to be like, didn't they already tell this story?
Well, they'll already know it because I already announced it. So,
did you talk about Marcus Labrizzi?
Can you just do the stupid story now? I don't remember anyone named Marcus. Tell them about Catherine's ghost. It's a good story.
So for those of you who didn't listen to the episodes that I wasn't in, and I totally wouldn't blame you if you didn't, I can repeat a story that Amelia told on one of those episodes. So I'm talking here about Catherine's ghost, who hangs out on Route 182 in Maine between Franklin and Cherryfield. It's right next to Fox Pond and a big mountain. It's actually Catherine's Mountain, but because Mainers are unique, they call it Catherine's Hill, even though it's a mountain. And it's named after this woman, Catherine Downing, who was beheaded in a car accident in 1862. It was a dark, foggy night, and she was driving along with her fiancé, and they just had some terrible accident and went right off the road. She lost her head, and he lost his body. His body was never recovered. The thing about Catherine, though, is she hangs out on the road walking around. Sometimes she has a head. Sometimes she doesn't have a head. But if you don't stop and offer your help, she like basically puts a curse on you so that something terrible is going to happen to you in the next couple of days. You'll have bad luck. You'll get some sort of terrible sickness. Or even worse than that, she might just appear in the backseat of your car and scare the bejesus out of you to the point that you like drive off the road and crash, as happened to a traveling salesman several years back. So the area is it's a weird spot, and lots of college professors in the area have taken a particular interest in it. There was one college professor who I didn't catch the name of, but took her classes there to actually do a lot of research on this project. And there were all sorts of like weird, strange electromagnetic forces that came up in the area. It just weird energy. Cars would shut down. Somebody described it as almost like driving into a force field. All right. There are reports from a reporter who was there with a cameraman walking around doing a story on the area. And she just said that she felt watched the whole time. And like a weight was pushing her, like pushing on her back, pushing her forward the whole time. So there's a lot of different sort of energy forces going on in this area. People say that she is walking around looking for her lover, or possibly help for her lover, her fiance, or maybe she's just looking around for her head. Who knows? But Maine, there's a University of Southern Maine. Yeah, I think that USM, I believe, professor named Marcus Labrizzi. He wrote a book all about the hauntings of Down East Maine, and it's called A Dark Woods, Chill Waters, Ghost Tales from Down East Maine. And in the book, he talks about the fact that the land has been inhabited for thousands and thousands of years. All right. So I did have an article that actually described her, Catherine herself, as having dark eyes. She has an unceasing stare and long black hair. And she's most often seen in a white wedding gown. And occasionally she is seen wearing like a pale blue dress, which ironically is the exact same outfit that my other girl back on Route 26. What was her name? I don't think she had a name. The article earlier, that girl also wears either a white wedding dress or a pale blue dress when you see her. Mm. So I thought it was interesting that there were so many similarities between these two stories.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if people just like, I feel like if you're driving in a car and you see someone in a white dress, it could look like a blue dress.
It could.
At nighttime or mm-hmm. at dusk.
And I would say likewise with a blue dress, it could look white.
Yes.
Yeah. Depending on how the light hits it. Yeah. So the Catherine's ghost, she will ask travelers for a ride to Bar Harbor, as opposed to the ghost who asked for a ride to the Route 11 church. So there's a lot of similarities. And so I wonder if these started off as one sort of spooky tale and just kind of proliferated out, that somebody moved away and they were like, oh, let me tell you this story. And you know how those things go.
Yes.
All of a sudden we have ghost stories being told on podcasts. Anyway, yeah. So that's my repeat story about Catherine's ghost from Maine.
A good story.
About an hour north of Bangor.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
Okay. So my last story for the evening comes
and
to
for
us
for the season.
For the season comes to us from Rhode Island. And I learned something new, Beth. Beth, have you ever heard of Block Island?
Block Island?
Yes.
I have.
Are you aware that Block Island is in Rhode Island?
I am.
And not in New York, like I thought. I did not know. I thought it was in New York. Well, I know that now. I'm saying that's what I learned.
Have you ever been to Block Island?
I would know where it was if I had been.
I have been to Block Island.
Well, maybe that's why you know.
I sailed on a Coast Guard cutter out to Block Island when I was, I don't know, probably about 10.
Cool.
And so the funny story is, we're on this Coast Guard ship, right? So one of our other cousins on the other side was captain. He was some mucky muck at the Coast Guard Academy in Connecticut. And so he got to take the boats out like on the weekend and he could like go sailing. And so he took us, I went with mom and my brothers and sisters, and he took us sailing out to Block Island. And so there was a piece of hardware out at the end of the boom that had come loose and it had to be retrieved before we could change course. And so we're barreling down on the beach, right? At like going at a crazy speed with this big, huge boat. And his instructions were to get that piece of hardware. And so his wife, who was also in the Coast Guard, she's like trying to like reach it. And meanwhile, there's these people like sunbathing. And like, that's the funniest part of that. There's these people sunbathing on the beach. And like, imagine like a Mack truck, like coming like out of control. And it's about to like run them over. That's what this boat was like coming at them on this, and they were completely oblivious, just laying there sunbathing. Anyway, that's my Block Island story.
Did they get hit?
No, we got the piece of hardware, we tacked the boat, we went off in the right direction, and everything was fine.
Oh, all right. Jeez.
But it was just this horrifying moment of like, we are gonna like hit ground and we're gonna be like launched on top of these people, and they are completely oblivious that this is about to happen to them. Hmm. Except they weren't, because it didn't happen to them.
That's great.
And they probably, to this day, have no idea how close they came to being, like, wiped out by this really big sailboat. Okay, anyway, sorry. So you had a story about Block Island.
I do have a story about Block Island. And it's a lighthouse story about Block Island.
Ooh.
which it's nice. So you can get married at this lighthouse. Cause again, I feel like I'm not like saying it enough. I'm doing haunted wedding venues. So this.
Because wait, do you have some sort of big event coming up in the next 16 days?
Oh, my wedding.
Oh, are you getting married?
I know. It's in 16 days. What the fuck? Oh God. I know. Paul and I, whenever there's a pause, we just look at each other and we're like, oh my God, we're getting married. And like 3 weeks from now, we'll be married.
Mm-hmm. 3 weeks from now, you'll be on your honeymoon.
I know. I keep like spending money because I'm like, I have like complete autonomy over my money now. But in a few weeks,
that's one way to look at it.
I have to like care about someone where I'm like, no, you. I guess I shouldn't spend $300 on plants without asking. Okay. So anyway, but I got all the plants until then. So Block Island Southeast Light is a lighthouse located on Mohegan Bluffs on Block Island, which is on Rhode Island. Block Island on Rhode Island. Why do they call Rhode Island Rhode Island when it's not an island? Anyone know that? Looking at you, history teacher.
I have no idea.
Dang. Okay. Block Island is surrounded by submerged rocks and sandy shoals, and many ships have met their end there. The area is often called the stumbling block of the New England coast. However, the six-mile-long island didn't get its name from being the stumbling block of the East Coast. It got its name from a Dutch explorer, Adrian Block, who charted the area in 1614. Block doesn't sound like a really Dutch last
name. Hang on. So the state was named by Dutch explorer Adrian Block, and he named it Root, R-O-O-D-T, I-land. Meaning Red Island, in reference to the red clay that lined the shore. And the name was later anglicized when the region came under British rule. So it means Red Island.
But it's still not an island.
Maybe there was red clay out on the islands. They didn't know how big anything was.
All right. So Adrian Block named Rhode Island, boring story, thanks Beth, snooze fest, and then named Block Island after himself. Great. So Block Island Southeast Lighthouse is a red brick tower. It is 16 meters high, which is pretty big, and it was first lit up on February 1st, 1875. The ghost stories all started in the early 1900s after a moeda. It was a murder there. And I don't mean a gaggle of crows. So the light keeper at the time hated his wife. And they fought a lot.
And I don't mean a gaggle. It's not a gaggle of crows. It's a murder of crows.
That's what I'm saying. I know. That's my point. That's the joke.
I know. It would have made more sense. It's not. I'm not talking about a lot of crows here. A gaggle is geese.
You know.
Also, I'm still slightly insulted that you called my my history of Rhode Island, which I just want to say I only put in because you asked the question.
You know, it's getting late. We laugh, we cry. There's a lot going on here on ghost hunting tonight. Okay, so anyway, there was a moeda, and the lightkeeper, he hated his wife, and they fought like crazy. And she probably hated him too, but in my research, I just found he hated her. And one day, he decided he's had enough, and he throws her down a flight of stairs, and she dies. So, he claimed that she committed suicide. But who commits suicide by just falling down the stairs? Like, that
actually,
doesn't make-
I know somebody whose father died falling down a flight of stairs, and they were convinced that the stepmother pushed him and then left him there to die at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah, that happens all the time. But no one was like, he committed suicide. They were like, he fell.
I think that the-
you and I, Beth, here's another story. Beth and I went and we got tattooed not that long ago together. And one of the tattoo artists was telling us a story about that lady who fell down and then they got her half of the house.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Stairs. And like there was a walker at the top of the stairs and everyone was like, why'd you fall down the stairs?
Yeah.
Maybe she was pushed.
That guy was very interesting. Do you remember his name?
I have his card.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Anyway, but no one believed the husband's story because no one kills themselves by throwing themselves downstairs. That's insane. So he was tried for and convicted of her murder and was sent to prison, and he never went back to the lighthouse. But she, on the other hand, never left the lighthouse. And people call her Mad Maggie, the man hater. Okay, that's just what I call her. But people really do call her Mad Maggie, and she really does hate men. So,
okay.
Okay, so sometimes she rearranged.
I have to say, like, if you really hate men, a lighthouse is probably not the place to be. I would also recommend not, like, you know, living on a fishing ship or, you know, in a YMCA.
She's stuck there. She's stuck there.
She should leave. If she hates the men so much.
So anyway, she rearranges the furniture, which I thought was quite interesting because that's a second ghost we've talked about, rearranging furniture in a lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of wild. So do you remember what the other lighthouse is called that they're rearranging the furniture at? I know it's in Maine.
I do not
Old remember. Captain.
No. I don't remember where he was, no. I remember the story, but.
And she's pretty nosy. Noisy. She's a pretty noisy gal. And she stomps up and down the stairs, the same one she died on, and just makes a lot of noise. Mostly she makes a lot of noise. Well, not really. She also does some other stuff. So if you were Beth or I, she'd just be making noise. But if you were a man and were sleeping by yourself, she would shake you awake. And if that didn't work, she would lift your bed up all the way up and then slam it down to the ground. And it would be quite startling and make a lot of noise. She also likes to lock men into empty closets and empty rooms. That's one of her other big things. When she's really angry, she likes to throw knives and sharp objects at men. And she also throws food around to anyone eating inside the kitchen.
She sounds awful. Just awful.
That's why she's called Mad Maggie, the man hater.
Yeah, well, somebody needs to go in there and exercise that building.
Her most famous story is the time she locked the lighthouse keeper out of the house altogether. The man was single and sleeping alone, and we just learned that's a problem. And Maggie began harassing him. He finally had enough and went racing outside in his underwear, only to find, when he tried to get back in, that the lighthouse door had been locked from the inside. When he was finally able to get into another building on the island to call the Coast Guard to come unlock the lighthouse so he could get in, it was just a mess. And he was no longer the lightkeeper after that.
He quit or they fired him?
Says he left.
He quit. Okay. I probably maybe would too.
Or maybe they're being polite about it. I can't imagine the Coast Guard likes getting calls in the middle of the night and gets there and the lightkeeper is outside in his underpants saying a ghost locked him out of the lighthouse.
Hmm. I can't imagine being the lightkeeper having to make that call.
Since it was built, the lighthouse had to be moved back from the edge at least once as erosion threatened to send it toppling into the sea. In 1993, it was moved back 80 meters. But the ghost stayed, and she's not too happy about moving the lighthouse either. And so now she just stomps around even more than she did before and moves even more furniture. So you can get married at this place, and it was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1990 and designated as a National Historic Landmark in 1997. The lighthouse also has a gift shop, and that's the story.
Does Mad Maggie go in and break stuff in the gift shop?
I don't know. I think it'd be cool if they had like a shirt with her photo on it, though. I'd wear it.
Only if it said Mad Maggie Man Hater.
Mad Maggie Man Hater. And she has like big red hair and it's her like yelling out the top and it's like, get out of here. But like here, like in a Boston accent because it's North Island. Like, if you work for Southeast Lighthouse on Block Island, give me a call. I'll do some marketing for you guys.
Meaning you'll design the t-shirt for them?
Come up with some good ideas for that gift shop you got there.
Yeah. Hey, and Amelia does have good ideas. She designed the Ghost Hunting in New England logo, and she does the vast majority of our social media stuff. So she's definitely somebody that could get you some attention.
So, Beth.
So, Amelia.
That's all the stories we got.
Well, it's been a good season. See you all in the fall.
No, we got drive-by ghostings.
We have drive-by ghostings.
Yeah.
People sent us some stories.
And also, I want us to start recording in January, but Beth said the fall. So write in and tell Beth to switch her time around.
You want to skip the fall and just go to January?
No, I want to start recording in June.
But you said January.
Oh, I didn't mean to. I meant to say June. Did I say January?
You did. If you want to do a summer season, that's all on you.
Great. So our first drive by ghosting tonight comes from Amy. And we've been listening to her the last 3 weeks, and now we're going to listen to another story again. And this is called Miscellaneous Ghostings. After our family dog passed away, I would often catch glimpses of shadows in our hallway that I would say was about the dog's height. It happened often enough that I pretty much came to expect it. This went on for nearly 5 years until we got a new dog. I never saw the shadow of the previous dog again. I missed it when it was gone. Shortly after my husband passed away, oh, I'm so sorry. I was in our cellar cleaning out after a flood. As I was bent over, I felt a tap on my lower back. I turned around expecting to see one of my sons trying to get my attention, but no one was there. I like to think it was my late husband, perhaps saying goodbye. Oh, I like that.
Or maybe even just saying hello.
Yeah.
Just coming to check on you, let you know he was there.
Okay. Now there's two more. So the next one is, I pulled into my driveway one dark winter evening with a car full of groceries. I honked the horn so everyone would know I was home. As soon as I honked, I saw a shadow in the living room and the curtain pulled back as if someone was looking out. At the same time, I realized my whole family was already out the kitchen door waiting to help me with the groceries. I asked my older son if it was one of his friends that was over. He said, no, why? And I told him that someone was in the house because I saw him looking at the living room. Well, no, there was no one else there. So not sure who I saw. There might have been someone else there. You might have seen a robber.
That's entirely true. Yeah, there could have been a burglar.
Oh, my God. Have you been watching the news around here? There's a city in Massachusetts. It's not really a city, but it is. It's called Newton. Have you been seeing about the break-ins there?
No.
They've had like 16 break-ins in the last 2 months.
Really?
Yes.
We have a terrible problem around like my general neighborhood with somebody comes by at night and breaks into the cars.
Oh, that's awful.
Or, I mean, they don't break into the cars, but if the cars are unlocked, they'll go in and take all your stuff.
Beth's neighborhood also has a problem with people stealing other people's cats.
Don't even.
And bringing them to the local shelters.
No. They don't bring them to the local shelters. They bring my cats 45 minutes away and drop them off places. And then people expect me to pay to get my cat back.
And it's an issue in this town. So Beth and I live in the same town now. And I joined the Facebook group, and it's the most insane thing I've ever seen. I've never seen a crazier town Facebook group in my life.
It's hilarious.
It's
there's so much drama.
It's like funny, but like also like embarrassing. And you're just like, oh my gosh.
You should have seen it 2 years ago. There were a couple of things that they had to like put a hard stop to. Like, we are not going to talk about this like fan. There was like this imaginary guy that people made up. That they would all talk about like they had gone to high school. It was like this ongoing joke, but it was like every day you'd see like 4 new posts about it. It was so like stuff like that.
Well, anyway, about once a month you see something about someone took someone else's cat and someone in their neighborhood has a cat trap. And I'm like, where did I move to?
Hashtag leave other people's pets alone.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And it's happened to Beth twice.
Twice.
It's very weird. And people are like so polarized on this option in the town Facebook. Like some people are like, leave people's cats alone. Like what the hell's wrong with you? Other people are like, you should keep your cat inside. And if someone wants to bring your cat to another town, that's their right.
No, it's not. It's my cat. Leave my cat alone. My cats know where they live. In fact, I go out at night. And I clap for them, like, on the back porch. And so I'll clap for them and I call for them. And sometimes they come right away. And other times it takes like 5 minutes. But I look outside and they're sitting on the porch waiting for me to let them in. Like, they're like little dogs. They come home. They know where they live. And the only reason that they don't come home is because some doofus has picked them up and driven them to a shelter several towns over.
All right, back to Amy's stories. A few years ago, I stayed at the inn at Diamond Cove on Great Diamond Island off the coast of Portland, Maine. The inn was built back in the 1890s and is the former barracks of Fort McKinley. It's a gorgeous place. My suite was on two floors with a kitchenette and living room on the main floor and a bedroom and bathroom downstairs in what would be considered the basement. I was trying to fall asleep my second night there, and I kept hearing someone above me pacing back and forth. It went on for several minutes. I thought to myself that whoever is in the room above me must be having a rough time sleeping. Then, of course, I remember that the room above me was part of my own suite. Since I don't get spooked from this kind of thing too easily, I thought that as long as I didn't hear someone coming down the stairs, I would be okay. The footsteps stopped and I fell asleep. I now wonder if it was the ghost of a soldier from when the inn was in the barracks. Thanks for reading, Amy from New York State. Well, my goodness, Amy, thank you so much for all these stories over the last 3 weeks. They've been fantastic.
They sure have. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to write to us and for just being a part of it.
Right. Listening to our podcast in the first place, we absolutely appreciate that, and all of the rest of you who listen to the podcast. And then it does take some extra time to sit down and write all of those stories down, and you know, the effort to send them in. And so, yeah, we absolutely appreciate that. So thanks for sending them and letting us share them with everybody.
Woo! Next. Oh, do you want to read these? Do you
want to
read
them? Go ahead.
Okay. Next, we have a email from Spencer. Hello again. So glad you enjoyed hearing about my ghostly pal, Colby. Strangely enough, he has been very active this week. Today's Colby story happened just a few months ago. He is an avid prankster, and he must like to startle people. I just warned my fiancé, Jack, well in advance of us living together that Colby the ghost and I came as a package deal, along with the dogs. He laughed and said it was fine. They could learn to be friends. Well, that isn't how he felt the first time he saw Colby. I had fallen asleep early one evening while my fiancé was still watching TV. Apparently, while I snoozed, there was quite the party in our apartment. Come the next morning, Jack looked over as though he hadn't slept a wink and very excitedly asked, "Do you want to know what your paranormal pal did to me last night?" I laughed and listened to his experience. Just after 11 p.m., the TV turned itself off. The lamp in the room turned off, but the TV streaming box was still on, indicated by a small light, and the wall plugs were still working. Jack was very puzzled until a blue light came from under our bedroom door. Oh my God. Floated to the edge of the bed, hovered, and went back to the hallway.
No thanks. No thanks. Goodbye.
Just as the light left, all the appliances turned back on, and by his account, I rolled over laughing in my sleep. He was terrified. But now when ghostly activity happens, he just says, "I'm not in the mood for this," or, "Hey, cut it out," something along those lines. I'm just glad someone else got startled instead of me for once. Best wishes, Spencer. Well, my goodness, Spencer, first of all, congratulations on being engaged. Just a wonderful way to be. And secondly, that's really scary. It's scary. But you know what? It almost, for some reason, I get like such like an alien vibe off of that story.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're laughing. Ooh, extra spooky. That's the part that spooks me out the most. I like it.
Yeah. It's a great story. Thanks, Spencer.
Thanks, Spence. How's it going? Thanks for the review you left us last week, too. Okay. Now on to Tom McMasters. Tom might be the only person, I think he's the only one who's written in every season.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, gold star.
Good on you, Tom. Thanks.
Maybe we'll send him a magnet.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, Amelia and Beth. Glad you liked my last story. As promised, here is number two of creepy stuff my kids have said. This one, again, has to do with my older son, Gavin. I love that name. I love the name Gavin. I really do. I love it. And I don't know. It makes you think it's like very like, I don't know, like cool 90s alternative name. I like it. I like that name. You know what else name I like? Like Trent. I like that name. Travis. I like that name a lot. I do. Leaf. If I have a son, I want to name him Leaf. Paul wants to name him Michael. Whatever. Okay. Anyway, back to the story. This one has to do with my older son, Gavin. He seemed to be quite a conduit of random things when he was little. He and I were in the car again. I don't know why this was the commonality for his creepy quotes. It just seemed to happen more often while we were driving around. He just blurted out, "I'm sorry, Dad." And I thought maybe he spilled something. And I said, "What'd you spill, Gav?" And he said, "Oh, nothing." And I said, "So what are you sorry about, buddy?" And he said, "I'm just sorry about that time I beat you up." I said, "What? When did you beat me up?" At this point, I was amused. He was like 5 or 6 years old at this point. That time, a long time ago, when I was a police guy and you had long hair, but you weren't you and I had a mustache. You were yelling at me and I didn't like it, so I hit you with my stick. And I'm really sorry about that. I don't remember the details in the area we were. He isn't really known for anything historically as far as his descriptions, but as we got out of the town area, he just trailed off about it. Happy hauntings, Tom.
So his dad was a hippie and he was one of the cops sent in to like break up like the Kent State riots or something? Like
maybe.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's really crazy. Yeah. That's a great story.
It is. I believe in that too. I believe that you have different like you are in the same group with all the same people every lifetime. Mm-hmm. And like, because there are people you meet and you're instantly very close to them and they're a very important person in your life and they just go away and it's like fine. And I think that like they're soulmate people too. Have you had that? Have you had like a friend who's been like a close friend for like a few months and then you guys just like stop being friends, but it's fine. And you're like, wow, that's kind of weird how that happened.
Fran says that only crazy people want to be my friend because that happens to me a lot, actually. I make a new friend and like we're like best buddies for like 6 months. And then one day, like, nope, not friends anymore. And it's not always because like something happened either. It was
that's my point. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes like, okay, obviously, like sometimes you will stop a friendship because like something happens. But sometimes it's just like. Like a one-off, like awkward thing or maybe, or I don't know. And then you're just like done, but it's fine.
I think that different people come into your life at different times when sometimes they need you and sometimes you need them.
Well, anyway, thank you all so much for the drive-by ghostings. Thank you all for listening to another one of our seasons. Thank you, Beth, as always, not only for doing the season, but for also helping me so much with my wedding and being one of the only people who's helping me as I am like a fish on a deck. It's not a good place to be.
You're on a deck?
Yeah. Like, you know, when a fish is on like a dock or on a deck and it's like flopping around, it doesn't know which way is which. It doesn't know where it's going. Doesn't know if it's going to die and become a ghost fish. And then it just like flops into the water and it'll be fine. But I'm like up, down and all around.
No, I'm sorry.
Beth is helping me.
We talked about it earlier. You have all the big pieces. You'll be there. Paul will be there. There'll be a minister. You got some rings and that's all you need.
That's it.
Everything else is gravy.
Yeah.
So thank you, Amelia, for another great season.
Thanks.
And
you're welcome.
Forcing me to actually do my research and get my stuff ready week after week.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. And we're doing a spooky thing tomorrow night. We're going to the Oliver House, which I can't wait for you to go to because it's my favorite haunted spot in the area.
And yeah, we're actually getting a guided tour.
Yeah.
We're going on like an official tour. You're going to edit that out, right?
Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. Yeah, it's by one of the guys from the show Haunted Collector. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it should be great fun.
So anyway, while we're gone, you guys can reach us online at ghostsomethinginnewengland.com.
I may even update it and get it all the way up to date.
You can send us your drive-by ghostings or just thoughts that pop into your head at ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at ghosthuntingne, on Instagram at ghosthuntinginnewengland, or on Facebook at facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland. If you need new vegan recipes, you can always follow me on Instagram at ar.childs. And do we got anything else, Beth?
And when you go into a restaurant this spring, remember, tip your waitress.
And your barista.
And your waiter.
And as always,
happy hunting.